Good morning, honorable judges. May it please the court, my name is Godfrey Mwangi. I represent Mr. Singh, the petitioner. I'm almost afraid to be here after hearing about the depressed lawyer. My client...
Are you depressed? I mean, sorry.
I almost feel depressed being here.
Could I say something?
My client suffers depression after having been shot in a robbery, which is part of the problem which caused his failure to appear before the immigration judge and then resulted in the immigration judge ordering him deported in his absence. And he thereafter filed a motion to reopen, which the judge denied, and filed a motion to reconsider that denial, which the judge denied again, and appealed to the Board of Immigration Appeals, which affirmed the immigration judge's decision.
But let me ask you a question, because I think, there are a couple of different ways of looking at this case, but as I understand it, Mr. Singh did appear for an interview in April of 2000, and he appeared at a hearing in August of 2000, both of which, you know, are post... This event of 1999, when the robbery occurs. So he's functioning in the year 2000 in a way to cooperate with the process. It's only in January of 2001, another 5 months later, that he doesn't appear. And I thought that was part of why the court doesn't find the kind of, or the immigration authorities don't find the kind of exceptional circumstances that would permit reopening. It's not that anybody would trivialize what happened to him, but he was functioning enough to appear on these other occasions, so why not now?
Judge Wood, what's interesting about that observation by the judge is that on January 10, when Mr. Singh does not appear, his lawyer then advises the judge that Mr. Singh had appeared at his office and had indicated that he was in absolutely no position to go to the hearing because he had psychological problems. Indeed, the attorney then opines to the judge that this guy needs a psychological evaluation, needs psychiatric evaluation.
So why couldn't that conversation have taken place with Mr. Singh in the room? So the judge doesn't think that Mr. Singh is, I mean, you don't just sort of on self-help grounds fail to show up at scheduled administrative hearings or court hearings. You have to go, or perhaps present enough documentary evidence to the judge before the hearing so the judge can issue a continuance in advance. But if people just sort of decided on their own, gee, I'm feeling kind of under the weather today, or even I'm feeling psychologically distraught and I really can't do it, how is the judge supposed to evaluate that?
Therein lies my client's grievance, and that's exactly why he raised the issue of ineffective assistance, because the counsel at the time was aware of this man's mental frame of mind, but up until January 10, where he tries to convince the judge that this man is not mentally fit to do this, he absolutely did nothing. Instead of referring him to a psychologist or psychiatrist for an evaluation, he informs the judge on the day of trial that this man should be evaluated, but had done absolutely nothing to get him evaluated. And that was the day on which this man was supposed to be examined and cross-examined. And if counsel truly believed, as he represented to the judge, which is clearly written in the judge's notes in the file, he should have done this before. And to my knowledge, this man had seen a couple of doctors, a psychiatrist, and another doctor who had documented his post-traumatic stress disorder, which this counsel knew about and presented letters to the judge about, but had not bothered to send this man to a psychiatrist for a workup, which I believe could have documented this man's condition.
Well, doesn't that take us to Lozada? Because if what we're going to focus on is the court, is the attorney's performance, the question really is what did Mr. Singh, through whatever representatives he may have had, do to inform the IJ and the BIA that the previous lawyer had been notified? I mean, eventually, at this stage of the game, we see the lawyer's response, which might have come because the disciplinary authorities notified and might have come, but the lawyer knew about it, of course, at some point. But what did you do to tell the authorities?
The lawyer at the time, after the immigration judge had entered the in absentia order, attempted to reopen by filing a motion a couple of days later, and the court rejected the motion to reopen on several grounds because the lawyer had failed to sign the documents to begin with, had failed to pay the fee, and had failed to serve the opposing party with the documents. So the court rejected that motion. Thereafter, Mr. Singh served the lawyer with notice that he was complaining about his assistance as ineffective.
Well, that's the issue, though. What's the proof that the lawyer, we've got the two out of the three Lozada requirements exist here. He filed a complaint with the state disciplinary authorities, but what's missing is whether he notified Mr. Connor of those allegations in a time and manner and gave him an opportunity.
Your Honor, there was, with the motion to reconsider, a copy of the return receipt, which had been signed by Dorothy Netz, who at the time was the secretary to Mr. Connor.
But your opponent contests that. They see only the return receipt to the disciplinary board.
My opponent has not carefully reviewed the materials which are in the record, but if they do review those materials in the record, that copy is attached to the materials attached to the motion to reconsider, which was filed with the IJ.
Do you think the IJ just overlooked that receipt?
I believe the IJ reacted to the opposition filed by the then INS counsel, who was looking, I believe, at Mr. Connor's rejected motion. And I believe that that was error, and I think that that was oversight.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mwangi. Ms. Wright?
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Jocelyn Wright. I represent the respondents in this case. Mr. Singh asked the immigration judge to reopen and to reconsider his in absentia deportation proceedings based on the exceptional circumstance that he allegedly received ineffective assistance of counsel.
But what about what Mr. Mwangi just said? If we look at the administrative record at the time this was presented and we're following the Lozada approach, if we find that this receipt is there showing that Mr. Connor had been notified, shouldn't we send this back for an evaluation by the board?
Well, Your Honor, I have to disagree with the representation that that notice is a part of the administrative record, because it clearly is not.
Well, clearly is not the word I would use. I mean, he's told us that it's stapled there, and
yes,
maybe somebody, in other words, not in his brief here, not anywhere else, but contemporaneously at the time.
Well, he says that it's a part of the motion to reconsider. And there's two points that I want to point out with that. One, again, according to the record that we have, the certified administrative record that was filed with this court, it is not a part of that record. And this court's jurisdiction to review the petition for review is limited to what is in the administrative record. And we made the point in our brief that because it isn't a part of the administrative record, it cannot be considered by this court. And second, there was no factual error in the immigration judge's finding that Mr. Singh failed to meet his burden of proving the second requirement of Lozada. And the second point is, even if it
is... So there's no way that you'll accept circumstantial proof that the lawyer was notified, such as his letter defending himself, dated very shortly after this complaint was supposedly filed. The lawyers just sort of randomly send these things off to the state board?
No, Your Honor, but that evidence that the Mr. Connor's response to the state board was given to the, was provided to the immigration judge not as part of a motion to reopen, not as part of a supplement to the motion to reopen, but in a very specific administrative vehicle, which is a motion to reconsider. And a motion to reconsider has very specific requirements and very specific purposes. It's not for the purpose of supplementing the evidence that's already before the immigration judge. It's simply to allege either factual or legal error in the previous decision, which would provide a basis for reconsideration.
And why isn't this factual? I mean, it seems like it's such a technical line that you're trying to draw with Lozada. You don't care if he really was notified. You don't care if there was a mistake in thinking he hadn't been notified. The notice requirement is a very important part of this process, but I take it really makes no difference to the agency whether he was in fact notified or not.
Well, it makes a difference
as long as the record, the first shot at it, doesn't have the right piece of paper. That's it.
Well, it makes a difference to the immigration judge because one of the purposes of Lozada is to enable the immigration judge to have all of the facts before him or her in deciding whether or not there has been ineffective assistance of counsel. And the fact that the alien has provided notice to the previous counsel can only bolster the confidence and credibility of the claim
well,
in the immigration judge.
Well, Connor's statement that was filed, the day after the board denied this motion for reconsideration. Suppose it had been presented, timely fashion to the immigration judge. What would he have done? Because Connor's version of what happened is at odds with Singh. So what happens in a situation like that? Is there an evidentiary hearing, or is it the judge
that would
accept the lawyer's explanation?
Well, that would certainly be an option, Your Honor. I mean, part
which
of the
would be an option.
Excuse me? Oh, the holding an evidentiary hearing. At least part, in Lozada at least, and also in a subsequent board decision, Rivera-Claros, the board explained why that notice requirement was so important, and that part of it was to cut down on evidentiary hearings, which would put the immigration judge in a...
Well, I don't know what cut it down, because if Connor's statement had been timely, it seems to create a factual dispute with his former client. So what is the immigration judge do then? Does he have a hearing?
Assuming that there was sufficient factual dispute present.
Well, there is. Isn't there? That's what I was asking you.
Then I'm assuming that the immigration judge would hold...
Is there or isn't there?
I wouldn't speak for the immigration judge, but at least the versions are certainly, to some extent, inconsistent.
Right. So there would have to be a hearing.
But at the same time, however, I have to point out that Mr. Singh, in his affidavit, never says that Mr. Connor told him or advised him not to appear at the hearing. He simply says he believed he didn't have to. And that itself is ambiguous, and maybe that requires some kind of explanation in the form of witness testimony. But again, and that would be resolved in an evidentiary hearing. Mm-hmm. But to finish my response to Judge Wood, on the reconsideration and the submission of the attorney's response. Part of the reason, again, is to have everything, all the facts before the judge. And so in this case, Mr. Singh could have satisfied the second requirement of Lozada by after he sent his notice to the attorney by giving the immigration court in his affidavit saying, I've sent this to the attorney. And if the attorney responds back with a letter saying, I've received your allegations, but I will respond to them in the course of responding to the state board. And he could have submitted that to the immigration judge and asked for an opportunity to supplement the motion to reopen. Certainly that was an option that was open to him but wasn't exercised. And I also have to point out that the attorney's, Mr. Connor's response that was submitted as a conjunction to the motion to reconsider was apparently sent to the state board in response to the state board, not to Mr. Singh's allegations that was sent directly to him. And the state board in turn forwarded it to Mr. Singh and his current attorney. And so to that extent, again, it underscores that he again failed to inform previous counsel of the seriousness of the allegations in front of him, or at least provides evidence for the immigration judge's finding that no notice was provided by Mr. Singh to his attorney and provided.
But why does it allow an inference one way or the other? If Mr. Singh had notified and the board had asked, he would have written that letter. If Mr. Singh had not notified and the board had asked, he would have written that letter. So I don't see how the letter responding to the allegations allows us to gain any more insight one way or the other into whether notice was provided.
Well, given the absence of any other, for example, the certified mail
receipt. Well, that's different. That's a whole different thing. But I don't think the letter advances the ball much in terms of what inspired the letter, only the board or the board plus the fact that he said, I've asked the board to do this. We don't know.
We don't know, except that it appears the stamp on the Mr. Conroy's response says it received at the state board, and there's a letter from in the record as well saying
right. So why? But the board's reason for sending it to him is because the board knew, and the board isn't going to say. And the other reason is, you know, we're sending this to you because Mr. Singh told us that he told you that he's asked us to send this to you.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, never mind.
Okay. And also, there's one other point that I wanted to make, and that is motions to reopen based on exceptional circumstances to rescind an absentia removal order has to be filed within 180 days after the actual in absentia order was entered. However, there's no numerical limitation. And so when the immigration judge denied Mr. Singh first motion to reopen, not the one filed by Mr. Connor, but the one that was actually considered in this case and denied. When he denied it, since it was filed well within 106 to 180 days, he certainly had the option of filing a second motion to reopen, which would cure the immigration judge's concern, and that wasn't done here. And so to that extent, the denial of the first motion to reopen certainly wasn't with prejudice, and there's nothing in the immigration judge's order which would convey the impression that it was a prejudicial denial. If the court has any further questions, then.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Wright.
Mr.
Mwangi, how much time do you have? 2 minutes?
Mr. Singh did advise Mr. Connor. Mr. Connor never wrote back to Mr. Singh to acknowledge receipt of notice of his complaint. Mr. Connor did respond to the Bar Association of the State of Wisconsin. The Bar Association routinely sends copies of everything it receives from either party to the other party, and that's how Mr. Singh got.
What about Ms. Wright's last point that Singh could have filed another motion for reconsideration and include Connor's, you know, statement?
Judge Posner, that reminds me, I think Judge Wood was the author of that opinion, and the case I think is Chaudhry versus the INS, where Judge Wood wrote that the board, the agency, doesn't have the discretion to just take these motions, stand at the top of the stairs, throw them down the stairs, and then decide what they are.
No, but this motion was incomplete because it didn't have the lawyer's statement.
Judge Posner, this man filed a motion to reopen on the basis of exceptional circumstances and filed what he believed was evidence of his exceptional circumstances. And later on, after the judge had denied the motion to reopen, which I believe was reasonable, which I believe demonstrated the exceptional circumstances in the form of ineffective assistance of counsel, then filed a motion to reconsider because the judge, I believe, had unreasonably decided the case and provided evidence which I regret was styled incorrectly, but which provided the judge in question with the correct evidence that he needed. Yes, it was styled incorrectly, but I believe it provided the facts that the immigration judge needed to decide the case. And in the interests of justice and in exercise of discretion, I believe that the judge could have granted the motion. He had before him what evidence he needed to decide that the assistance this man had received was ineffective. And I just get frustrated when the agency kind of insists on these rules and procedures that amount to, you know, a regime that just avoids justice and just pursues rules for the sake of rules. And I understand that...
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wong. Your time is expired. Okay, next case for argument, Austin versus Barnard, Mr. McGinley.